The biblical psalmist praised the faithfulness of their God for bringing them up out of the pit. The Buddhist gardener notices the smell of the mud and the smell of the lotus blossom, praising a similar faithfulness of nature. It requires faith to know that the lotus grows best in the mud, and so do we. And I think we can all agree that there is plenty of mud to go around. Plenty. But to figure out how to get to that lotus blossom at the end of the story that rises gracefully out of the muck, we have to explore some things in a bit of detail first. What is mud, first of all? Second, what is the lotus in metaphor? And how do we really get there? So Thich Nhat Hanh uses mud as a parallel for suffering. And in Buddhism, the Four Noble Truths revolve around that concept of suffering. Number one, there is suffering. It exists. Number two, there is a course of action that generates suffering. Number three, suffering ceases, and there is happiness. And number four, there is a course of action that leads to the cessation of suffering, the arising of happiness. Thich Nhat Hanh suggests that many of us don't know how to accept that there is suffering because we try to cover it up and get around it rather than learning to suffer well. Mindfulness practices aid in the awareness of pain and suffering so that we can connect more deeply with ourselves and others, connecting with our emotions. But Rebecca Parker, one of our Christian UU theologians, pushes back on the idea of redemptive suffering, that suffering can save us, taught by some theologies of Christianity, often leading the oppressed to believe that suffering is glorified and their natural lot in life. Black humanist theologian Anthony Pinn writes that suffering is evil and it must end. To think otherwise is to deny the value of human life. In Pinn's view, suffering results from human misconduct. Pinn trusts that we can end oppression and find ways to eliminate other kinds of suffering. When we finally stop waiting for a divine to help, he suggests that we will take the initiative to help others and ourselves. Said another way, Pinn believes that joy comes in the morning only if we take the initiative. Regardless of our theology, though, or what we think about God, we also form beliefs about theodicy, or the problem of evil in the world. We have beliefs about the mud and the life force that propels us, the lotus, to grow. So, what are our beliefs about the lotus? In Buddhist tradition, the lotus symbol is not of our inner individual enlightenment, but for our own enlightenment without the reduction in suffering of others, is no enlightenment at all. Instead, the lotus is collective enlightenment and liberation. Lotus represents purity of the body, speech, and mind, as if floating above murky waters of material attachment and physical desire. The lotus represents growth, beauty, and rising energy. And I am simply hoping that we might be able to make good use of our suffering over the last, oh, how many years has it been? And discover happening again, happiness again. I'm hoping that we can realize that we are not approaching a crisis, but approaching a pathway of recovery from one. That out of this collective feeling of being stuck in the mud, something calls us back to hope, to growth, to beauty, into liberation. Now, how do we get there? Rebecca Parker writes in an essay about her 1976 cross-country road trip to seminary when she and a friend decided to take back roads. She describes that one afternoon, while passing through rural Pennsylvania, they noticed blinking yellow lights warning of danger. They saw fields covered in standing water and passed several roads that were blocked off and closed. "It looks like they've had a flood here," one said. And they crossed a bridge over a wide river. Their water was high and muddy, flowing fast, and sandbags lined the roadway. "Gosh," the other said, "they must have had quite a bit of water to contend with here. It looks like it was a major flood." The two travelers headed out of town, following a winding country road, all the while noting the evidence all around them that there had been a dramatic flood. And then they rounded the bend, and in front of them, a sheet of water covered the roadway. The water was rising fast, like a huge silver balloon being inflated before their eyes. They stopped and started to turn the car around, but the water was rising behind them as well. Suddenly, they realized the flood hadn't happened yesterday or last week. It was happening here and now. Dry ground was disappearing fast. So they scrambled out of their car to higher ground, soaked to the bone, outside of their familiar insulated car, outside of the familiar insulated misjudgments about the country they were traveling through. Rebecca Parker writes, "That is what it is like to be white in America. It is to travel well ensconced in a secure vehicle, to see the signs of what is happening in the world outside the compartment one is traveling in, and not realize that these signs have any contemporary meaning. It is to be dislocated, to misjudge your location, and to believe you are uninvolved and unaffected by what is happening in the world." The mud is rising around us. And it's not just our mud. It's not someone else's mud. We are in this mud together. But friends, we are not stuck in the mud. We are rooted in this mud together. Finding the nutritious lessons inside, reaching with the lotus flower for the light beyond the darkness. James Cone said that to live meaningfully, we must see light beyond darkness. He suggests that we are required to have faith and hope. And I don't think he means that we must work at it. Just as we have ample mud, I also believe that we have ample faith and hope in things unseen. Faith and hope are not exclusively theistic beliefs, but instead elements of the human condition that we all share. For example, as James Baldwin wrote, "You think your pain and your heartbreak are unprecedented in the history of the world, but then you read. It was books that taught me that the things that tormented me most were the very things that connected me with the people who were alive, who had ever been alive." Suffering does not redeem us. Suffering does not save us. Suffering defines us as alive. Suffering helps us identify with everyone who has ever lived or will ever live. And in our sharing of suffering, our sharing of our stories, we also include how we survived, why we're still here. Baldwin says these stories are never new, but must always be heard. There isn't any other tale to tell. It's the only light we've got in all this darkness. Our stories are the light in the mud. Our listening and telling nurtures those lotus petals to break open into bloom. Our roots are wet and covered in earth. Let us grow together. Amen.